One of the most important recent trends in management of colorectal cancer is the increasing use of surgical resection of hepatic-only metastases. I met with surgical oncologist Dr. David Geller for an update of this treatment paradigm, and he began our conversation by reviewing the evolution of thinking about this therapeutic strategy.
The history goes back almost 3 to 4 decades, the ability to perform hepatic resection surgery safely. Our morbidity and mortality have dramatically improved with liver surgery, and that comes from 2 or 3 reasons. One, we have a better understanding of liver anatomy and physiology. Second, our anesthesia techniques have improved. And third, technology has advanced to the point where we have better devices in the operating room, better ultrasound imaging and better hemostatic devices, so that now 97% of the liver resections I perform are bloodless. I can take an 80-year-old octogenarian, slice their liver in half, removing half the liver. They lose no blood. They have no hypotension or low blood pressure. And they typically skip intensive care unit and go to the floor and are home in 5 days. When I do it laparoscopically, they're home in 2 days, 2 to 3 days. So we
take out half the liver laparoscopically?
Yes. Not every case, but selectively. Thin patients with tumors away from the hilum of the liver or not involving the inferior vena cava, that laparoscopic right hemihepatectomy has been performed. Probably there's 3 or 4 surgeons in the United States that will routinely perform this. And I would say the programs in Pittsburgh, Northwestern in Chicago, Louisville in Kentucky are the 3 largest programs that perform these. So going back, we need to look at the historical perspective. Our safety has improved, our techniques have improved, and it's important to recognize that hepatic resection is the only chance for ultimate cure for these patients. At the same token, the chemotherapy, 3 and 4 drug combination therapies, in the last 5 years, we've had 4 new drugs approved for metastatic colorectal cancer. So the Cadillac therapy right now is a FOLFOX plus Avastin, which is 5-FU plus leucovorin plus oxaliplatin plus bevacizumab, which is Avastin. That 4-drug combination will have anywhere from 60 to 75% initial response rates. So it may be that we have a patient that presents with 6 metastatic colorectal cancer lesions in the liver. They go on neoadjuvant therapy prior to liver surgery, 2 or 3 of them disappear and the larger lesions are downstage. Now they're eligible for hepatic resection surgery. So the chemotherapy modalities have helped us to increase our operative indications.
And when you say, quote, 2 or 3 disappear, does that mean you're not going to resect that area?
No, I think that's a very important point. And we know that many of these, once they go off of therapy, they will recur. So when I look at every patient, I would say, let me see your worst and let me see your best. And it's important to look at the first CT scan and see when the staging was the worst. And I will go in and try and resect all tumors that were present originally. And it may be that if they're all confined to the right lobe, it's very standard. I do a right hemihepatectomy, remove half the liver. If there were bilobar tumors, I'll try and do a lobectomy on one side and a wedge resection on the other. If I identify intraoperative ultrasound, a little marble deep in the other side of the liver, that's a perfect indication for a radial frequency ablation. I'll resect the large tumors on one side. And if there's a small tumor on the other side that I can't resect, then I can perform open radial frequency ablation at the same setting as a resection and ablate that location. Other surgical options that we have include preoperative portal vein embolization. And what we're doing in that situation is we're tricking the liver, if you will, into thinking the resection's been done to cause growth or hypertrophy of the remaining segment. So if I have to remove 3/4 of a liver, and I think that remaining 1/4 is not quite enough liver mass, we can have the radiologist go in, intentionally clot off or embolize the right portal vein to cause that left lateral segment to grow a hypertrophy and wait 4 weeks. And that's enough time for that. We get about a 25% growth in that 1 month period. And that allows greater residual liver mass to perform an extended lobectomy where we may remove 2/3 to 3/4 of a liver. You need about 25% of good functional liver mass for a patient to survive.
What do we know about the availability of surgery and experienced surgeons across this country to deal with this problem? Who's operating on these people? How much experience do you need? How much variation do you see in outcome based on experience?
I think there's a very wide range of outcome. And in general, it's my opinion, these patients, general surgeons and colorectal surgeons usually don't have the expertise required. You need formal liver surgery training that comes from either a liver transplant fellowship, a focused hepatobiliary fellowship or a surgical oncology fellowship that has a lot of expertise in hepatic resection surgery. And so these patients in general are referred to centers. There's probably 20 or 30 major centers in the United States that will perform that. At the University of Pittsburgh, we'll perform over 300 hepatic major liver resection operations per year. And the outcomes, I think high-volume centers with expertise have better outcomes, meaning that we probably should expect mortality in less than 2%, 1 to 2% risk. And those are usually only extreme cases where you're removing three-quarters of a liver and the marginal liver, but morbidity is probably less than morbidity. Typically might be a post-operative infection or a wound complication or bile leakage from the cut edge of the liver. Morbidity is less than 5%, mortality less than 1% in major hepatobiliary centers.
What about the patient who presents with a simultaneous primary colon cancer and metastasis to the liver? What do you think the optimal approach to those patients is?
If occasionally we are referred patients like that in Pittsburgh, and I'll get our chief of colorectal surgery to work with me, and if the patient is a reasonably healthy 40 or 50-year-old, then we'll do a simultaneous colon resection, such as a low anterior resection or a right hemicolectomy, plus the liver resection. But that requires two perfect operations, because if you have a complication in one, it can hinder the outcome for the other. So you need a perfect colon resection surgery, and you need a technically perfectly performed liver resection surgery. We've done probably 20 of those operations in the last 3 years at Pittsburgh, and the outcomes are excellent for them. However, that's not what usually happens in the community. And it's perfectly fine for patients identified with a colon cancer. They may have bleeding from it. They may have a partial obstruction from it. And it's perfectly fine for the colorectal surgeon or the general surgeon to perform the colectomy. Usually in that situation, most of those patients will have positive lymph nodes. If they can visually see the liver lesion at the time of the colon resection surgery, I recommend a needle biopsy just for confirmation. It just takes an extra moment or two if they can see it. And that way, we don't have to subject the patient to a biopsy at a later time. Patient recovers from the surgery. If they haven't undergone upfront CT PET scan imaging, then that's very important to complete the staging. And what we're looking for there is how many cancers are in the liver, how big are they, and are there any other distant metastases such as a lung metastasis or a bone metastasis. In that situation, if we've identified them and they've recovered from the surgery, I think the preferred approach is I'm never in a rush to operate on the liver. Let the patient recover from the colon surgery, complete their staging, and get two or three cycles of adjuvant chemotherapy, because even if they didn't have the liver lesions, if there's stage 3 and lymph nodes involved, they need the chemotherapy anyway. And so let them get two or three cycles of chemotherapy with the oncologist, then restage them at 3 months with a CT PET, and if we have stable disease or slight improvement, that's the perfect time to go in and do the liver resection operation. We don't want to give them 6 to 9 months of chemotherapy, because chemotherapy damages the liver and causes steatosis, fatty changes in the liver, or worse, steatohepatitis. And there's now a syndrome called CASH, C-A-S-H, similar to NASH. NASH is non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, fatty liver disease. Chemotherapy can cause the same thing. And those fatty livers do not tolerate major hepatic resection. So the goal would be 2 to 3 cycles of chemo after the colon resection, go in and do the liver resection, clear all disease, and let the oncologist then finish up with a few cycles of adjuvant systemic chemotherapy following about a month after the liver resection surgery. I think that right now is considered the gold standard preferred approach for stage 4 colon cancer.
What about intrahepatic infusion of chemotherapy?
Intrahepatic infusion and chemotherapy has really fallen by the wayside. Kent Minnie's article, it was Christmas week, New England Journal of Medicine, 1999, repopularized placement of a hepatic artery pump for infusion. The only drug approved in the United States is FUDR, floxuridine. It's a cousin of 5-FU. And that was an era when we didn't have these 3 and 4 drug combinations. Response rates in that situation may have been around 50%. Now, with the 3 or 4 drug cocktails, we're seeing better systemic response rates, and we avoid the morbidity. Those pumps had a lot of morbidity because there's a 20% incidence of bile duct scarring or biliary sclerosis from the infusional FUDR, which is often irreversible. So you can say, well, what is the role of a pump in someone that's received a FOLFOX or FOLFIRI systemic chemotherapy? I think there's very little role, and we see almost no referrals. The oncologists aren't asking for them. With the newer and better drug combinations, I don't think in the last 3 years I've maybe placed two pumps, and those for patients who have failed systemic chemo, and the response rates are probably no better than placebo, 10 to 20%. So I think that until we see newer drugs available, or I think the only role right now for pumps would be in a randomized setting where you're combining systemic chemo perhaps with a pump chemo. But in the community, I don't see any major role for infusional liver therapy at the current time.
One of the important additions to systemic therapy of colorectal cancer in the last few years has been bevacizumab or Avastin. What are the considerations in a patient who's receiving or has received Avastin in terms of surgery?
Important. And there's some major side effects from Avastin or bevacizumab. They can hinder wound healing, number one. And number two, there's an increased incidence of bleeding as well as cardiac events. You can even get thrombotic events. So they either can cause bleeding, they can cause vessel clotting. So patients with a bad cardiac history, history of myocardial infarctions, we have to use bevacizumab with caution. If patients are receiving that, and the patient should receive it, if they can tolerate as a four-drug combination of Avastin plus FOLFOX therapy, what we typically will do is I'll recommend to the medical oncologist, and this is an open, constant dialogue. One of the important points is that I'm never in a rush to operate, but I love to see the patients early. And the reason for that is you come up with a plan with the oncologist, and it's a constant dialogue. You give them a couple cycles, both of us will see them in 3 months, and we'll plan. And if the plan is to go ahead with liver surgery, typically we'll hold the Avastin in the third cycle, in the last cycle of chemotherapy, pull the Avastin out, just give that. And to operate, I like all chemotherapies off for 3 weeks so the immune system recovers from the nadir of your bone marrow suppression. I like the Avastin off for 6 weeks. So typically you don't have to wait a whole 6 weeks, you just pull the Avastin out of the last cycle. And that requires an open dialogue between the liver surgeon and the medical oncologist, and they're happy to do that. If they know, we literally can schedule these patients for surgery 2 months ahead of time. And you say, you're going to get your last cycle of chemo, and then we're going to do the surgery 4 weeks later, but we'll hold the Avastin in the last cycle. And it makes it very safe to do the surgery then. We've seen no complications if you have that 4 to 6 week window without the Avastin.
What are some of the common questions you receive from surgeons in practice, either general surgeons or hepatic surgeons, about the whole issue of surgery for colorectal metastases?
I think an important issue is the timing of the liver surgery and also how many cancers in the liver. If you look beyond a decade ago, the classic teaching was up to 4 cancers in the liver, they're an operable candidate. Now we're way beyond the limits of that because I just did a right hepatic lobectomy 2 weeks ago on a man that had 6 cancers in the right lobe of the liver. So if I can remove all of the cancers safely, then that is the preferred approach. Obviously, if someone has 6 or 7 tumors in the liver, their chance for recurrence is much greater than someone has a solitary lesion. If a person has a solitary metastatic colorectal cancer lesion, we can cure that patient with resection alone in probably 40% of the time. And that means that 40% cure rate, 60% will recur, and yet we don't have good biomarkers to predict. We have a few prognostic indicators, but ultimately we don't know who's going to recur and who doesn't. So I recommend to all patients they get some adjuvant chemotherapy after resection. We have a few markers that you're at very high risk for recurrence or you're at lower risk, but everyone is still at risk. So one question we get from surgeons, how many tumors? And I would say that right now, we will push the envelope and go anywhere from 5 to 8 tumors can still be resected. If a person's got 20 metastases in the liver, I don't think that there's a major role at the current time for hepatic resection surgery. But if it technically can be done, preserving enough liver mass, I have no problem taking on a patient that has 6, 7, 8 lesions in the liver. So a number of tumors is a common question, and timing is common both from the surgeon because they're the front line. They're the ones seeing the colon cancers and resecting them. And if they call me, I'll usually say, go ahead, do the colon resection surgery, have them see the medical oncologist postoperatively, get complete the staging with a CT PET scan, give them 2 to 3 cycles of chemo, and then 3 months from now, we'll do the hepatic resection approach. And I think this is where the field has evolved, and this is cutting edge right now, would be that approach. I think that one thing, an additional treatment modality, we do see patients who are not operative candidates for colorectal mets. They have failed first and second line systemic chemotherapies, meaning FOLFOX and then FOLFIRI, and typically even third line agents will have Erbitux CPT-11 combinations. The important teaching point there is we still have treatment modalities. As long as these patients have preserved liver refunction, they don't have jaundice, they don't have ascites, one treatment modality we have are the SERSFIRs. And that treatment of SERSFIRs for those patients, those are the, if it's liver dominant or liver only disease, that's probably the majority of the patients out there who are failing, or at least half the patients who have failed systemic chemo, we can give the yttrium 90 into the liver and we'll still see a 30. Typically, you don't see the tumors disappear. We see disease stabilization. And it's a pretty safe treatment modality. So we like to see patients in referral for that. In addition, I'm participating in a 4-center study using viral gene therapy. This is herpes viral replication active gene therapy injected into the liver, followed by 2 cycles of second-line chemotherapy. And this is obviously a phase 2 research protocol. And we are seeing some response rates with that. I have a government-approved 18 slots for this phase 2 study at the highest dose gene therapy, and I've treated now 3 patients in Pittsburgh. It's 4 injections into the liver, and I have a patient that got a treatment this past Monday, and he's getting a second treatment this coming Monday, and he's the 18th or last slot in the United States. So the field is moving forward with these novel advanced approaches, but we need to do this in a research protocol type setting. The goal here is to boost response rates. And I think in the future, we'll be looking at, can we give chemotherapy plus a viral gene therapy approach? Can we give chemotherapy plus yttrium 90, radioactive glass beads for internal radiation? We don't know yet how to combine these drugs, but I think that the response rates when we combine them will be better than chemotherapy alone.
I'm curious from your perspective as a surgeon how you see this new generation of systemic therapy for colorectal cancer being tolerated by patients. Now we're talking about oxaliplatin and irinotecan, Erbitux or Avastin. What are you seeing as patients come back to you in terms of how they tolerate these agents?
Well, first off, we're seeing fabulous response rates. In the era with 5-FU leucovorin alone, for 2 decades, all we had was 5-FU leucovorin. And it's an exciting time to be in the field of hepatic surgical oncology because I never say never. I'll see patients with 7-8 lesions, and the response rates, when they occur early. They're fabulous. Half the lesions will disappear, and the other patients will be downstage to the point that we can operate. So we're seeing increased multimodality approaches for success. As far as tolerance, it's very variable. Some patients will breeze through chemotherapy and really exhibit no side effects, and others, after a couple cycles, they won't tolerate it. With oxaliplatin, we're seeing neurotoxicity, and they get numbness or tingling in their hands and their feet. We don't want to cripple somebody. We've seen patients literally that can't hold a pencil or a pen and sign their name, so we want to avoid the grade 4 toxicity there. But, you know, the grade 2, type 2 and 3 toxicity, it's usually reversible. So you stop the oxaliplatin, and the nerves will slowly regenerate. In general, though, I think the patients can tolerate it. There is a fair amount of what's poorly tolerated is the GI toxicity. They can get mucositis, dehydration. That's more commonly seen with Camptozar, with the CPT-11 or irinotecan in combination with 5-FU leucovorin. There's some patients, they'll get completely wiped out and severe diarrhea and dehydration, and we really have to cut back on the dose, or ultimately that may limit the full theory. But when we see oxaliplatin with the 5-FU leucovorin and bevacizumab, that's usually reasonably well tolerated, at least for a few cycles. Eventually, that neurotoxicity is cumulative, and we have to stop the oxali if the neurotoxicity gets worse.